Welcome to our presentation this morning on cataloging and providing access to streaming and video records in the online catalog. My name is Elizabeth McDonald, and I'm from the University of Memphis, and my co-presenter is Joyce Johnston, and she is from Jackson State Community College. We're very pleased you decided to join us this morning for a cataloging topic, since they're not usually the most popular of topics in presentations. I thought I would go over a little bit kind of what our presentation goals were, and I will try not to walk away from the mic again. We want to discuss some of the issues we encountered when we started cataloging streaming videos. These issues involved consortial issues, there were vendor issues, and then the issues we actually had in cataloging and getting the records into the system itself. This isn't a we're not going to teach you how to catalog streaming videos, but we will be covering the basic guidelines of the portions of the record that are specific to streaming videos that we wound up dealing with as we were actually beginning our cataloging process. One of the first things that I wanted to do was give you guys a little bit of background as to the environment in which we catalog in, because as those of you who actually catalog know, the environment you're cataloging in has an impact on the decisions you make and what you need to do to provide access to your particular patrons. At the University of Memphis, we are a member of a consortium. It consists of the University of Memphis, its branch libraries, and our three partner libraries. And I wanted to give you a little bit of background as to what's involved with that, because we're actually a very diverse consortium for only actually having four members. Our partner libraries are Lemoyne Owen College, Jackson State Community College, and the Law Library at the University of Memphis. University of Memphis is located, of course, in Memphis. We're a metropolitan university of about 20,000 students. We offer bachelor's, master's, doctoral, and law degrees. We have four branches, audiology and speech pathology, music, mathematics, and chemistry. Lemoyne Owen College is one of the historically black liberal arts colleges. It's also in Memphis. It has only about 800 students and offers a baccalaureate degree. Jackson State Community College is in Jackson, Tennessee, which represents, they're about an hour and a half away from Memphis, which gives us some challenges in not having everyone in the same city. They're a community college with three branches. They have approximately 2,700 students, and they offer an associate's degree. And then, of course, we have our law library, which is in Memphis, which is a specialized collection of about 420, with about 425 students, and they offer a law degree. So as you can see, we run from the very small of 425 students up to 20,000 plus at our university, and go all the way from community colleges through doctoral dissertations, and that affects our collections and has quite an impact on our shared catalog. So first of all, we thought we'd talk a little bit about what exactly is streaming video. I mean, we all know what video is when it's on a videotape that we put in our machines or on a DVD. But streaming video is kind of a slightly different animal. We got this definition from whatis.com, and it's streaming video is a sequence of moving images that are sent in compressed form over the internet and are displayed by the viewer as they arrive. And it's the displayed by the viewer as they arrive that gives its unique features and some of the problems associated with it. Because you're not actually downloading it and saving it onto your computer, it's just coming at you across the wires and you're viewing it as it comes across the wires. It does require a player, but the player isn't like a DVD or a VCR player. The player is actually a kind of software that you have on your computer that allows you to actually view the images as they come streaming across the internet. And one of the things to be aware of is it does really require high-speed access. Dial-up will not work. It's just not fast enough to have the images come across. And even with high speed, sometimes you can get some stuttering. And I know I sometimes work from home, using my home computer to log into my computer at work. And when I'm doing that, sometimes images will stutter just by I've got too many computers running through the network in the mix. But be aware that you do want high speed. So a little bit of background. These streaming videos that we decided to catalog were purchased by the TBR, the Tennessee Board of Regents, of which the University of Memphis is a member. And they were 29 FMG Film Media Group on-demand streaming videos. And they purchased them initially in the spring of 2006 And we started cataloging in the spring of 2007. And you may wonder why such a long delay, and we'll discuss some of the issues that led to that type of delay as we started doing that. There were a number of different things. Part of the reason the cataloging was delayed, initially there was a certain amount of bureaucracy that involved in the delay because they signed and started getting it, but as you know, any of you that work in large institutions, getting the information from the folks who purchased the information down to those of us that are trying to get the records in the system can sometimes be a bit of a bumpy road. So there was that issue that was involved in it. Then there were a number of authentication issues, which we'll go into a little more bit more detail as I get a little bit further in the presentation. And then, of course, all the issues as we started trying to deal with how we were going to actually provide means to cataloging and started getting into the nitty-gritty of what was involved in getting these records into our system. So some of the consortium issues that we had to deal with. First of all, not all of our institutions are TBR affiliates. Within our consortium at the University of Memphis, the Law Library and Jackson State Community College are all TBR affiliates, so they would have access to these videos that were purchased through TBR. But Lemoyne-Owen is not. So whatever we do, we have to remember to take into account that they're not going to be able to view these things because they don't have legal rights to them, at least the way in which they were purchased under this contract. Initially, when we first got these, we didn't get them into the catalog, but both Jackson State and the University of Memphis did find means to provide access to them outside of our catalog. On the University of Memphis site, that was done through our Regents Online Degree Program, which is our distance education site, and they actually have a link off that portion of the University of Memphis website that if you know to go there, you can get access to the streaming videos. Jackson State actually put a link in from their library homepage. So, and that's parallels what a lot of libraries have done with other electronic resources, electronic journals, in that they often provide access initially off your web pages because it's a little bit quicker than getting them into the catalog, and yet your students can still get to them while you're figuring out all the issues involved in getting them into your catalog. But, of course, we wanted to provide access through our catalog as well because it's not convenient for students to have to think, okay, if there's a video, if it's on a cassette or a DVD, it's in the catalog, but if it might be through another format, I have to go look here. So we really want to provide as much access through our catalog as possible. So that was the ultimate goal in all of this process, even though we did have an intermediate step. And these two intermediate steps still do exist. Our online distance program students can still find access off their site, and Jackson State still has access off their main homepage to the library. Now, what were the issues that we had about authentication that I talked about? And when we originally purchased these videos, they were not IP authenticated, but they were still login and password authenticated. And that provides a number of challenges because there's no good mechanism for safe distribution to passwords. There are workarounds that you can come up with on the web, but you're always open to somebody getting the password and giving it to all their friends everywhere else that there is. There are even websites out on the internet that specialize in people posting passwords to provide the whole world access to something that they haven't paid for. So we had concerns about that. In the past, some of our password protective things have had passwords located at our reference desk or research and information services desk. But the problem when you do that, of course, is the student has to go get the password, which is fine if they're sitting in the library, but if they're sitting at home in their jammies, it's not such a good thing to know that you have to go get your password from the desk. And, of course, that's the big advantage to all of our electronic resources is their ability to be used from home. From home, wherever you happen to be, or even not even from home. I mean, with IP authentication, I could use them from here. So basically, in the spring of 2007, FMG got its IP authentication up and running, which they hadn't before. We knew they were in the process of doing it. So that gave us the freedom to be able to easily solve this particular issue in getting them into the catalog. So the next step in that process, once we had that ability, is making sure that we had our proxy information working on the system. Because when you have IP authentication, of course, if you're sitting in the library that's using a computer that's in our IP range, you automatically authenticate through and you can get to the resource. If, however, you're sitting at home and you're going in through an internet service provider, that IP range is different and the resource doesn't recognize that you're a valid user. So we go through a proxy server that you can log into that says, oh yes, you're part of our group and we'll let you on through. So initially when we started setting up our ebooks for NetLibrary, we set up a test record out on the database so we could play with how it looked, how it displayed, and make sure that the proxies work. It allows us to test the links, look at what the links say. It also allows us to test it to make sure the links are going through the way they're supposed to on campus. It also allows us to test the proxy servers when we get home, you know, make sure we check them from home, that the people coming in from off campus can use them. And this is just an example of what our test record for cataloging looks in our current display. And the top two, click here to read online via UM and read online via JSCC, are actually the streaming video records. The bottom two are earlier NetLibrary links. The advantage to this is one of the things that Joyce pointed out right away, well, is they're not reading them, they're actually viewing them. So we have since, when we've gone to production mode, changed that to say click here to view. But this allows us to test. This resides in our database, and we can look at how all our items are. We didn't put a test item in for our streaming videos. Then if you click on the Jackson State and you're not on Jackson State Community College, this is the proxy server information that you get that allows the student to give their login and password so that they can provide access from home. We didn't take a screenshot of the one from the University of Memphis, of course, because I was sitting in my office at the University of Memphis and couldn't get to it. But we also have a University of Memphis proxy page if you click on the University of Memphis link and you're at home. One of the other issues that we came up against when we started doing our concerns is we discovered that initially FMG had two different versions of the streaming videos on their site with two different location codes for them. And we discovered that when we started cataloging and comparing the cataloging records, we were going, well, I don't see this when I look at it, but you see this when you look at it. And it took us a while to sort through this. And basically, what happened is one of the addresses gave you just the link to the complete video. The other address gave you a link to the complete video and chaptered version, so you could look at just a 2-minute or a 4-minute segment of the video. And it was interesting because initially off the web pages, Jackson State had chosen one version, and of course we had naturally chosen the other version. What we decided to do in talking about this is that we would just use the chaptered version and include the chapter headings in the 505 field. But we talked about it a lot because what would we have done if in a consortial environment we had not been able to come to an agreement that we were both going to use the chaptered version. And we can see with electronic resources, I mean, I don't see that. At least we all talk very well with one another and get along and can come to an agreement. But the possibility always exists that because we are so diverse and we have community college students versus, you know, doctoral research students, that we might at some point come to an issue where, no, we need the difference because our student bodies are different and our patrons are different. So we talked about the things that we might have done if this had happened. And, of course, you always have the option in this case that if you're describing something that is substantially different in your resource, to create separate records. That's not the most patron-friendly thing in the world to do, although many libraries do it for a lot of their electronic resources and their electronic journals. We're trying to, at least, I think, move away from that where we are, but that's always one option that we discussed. The other thing that we would have discussed, and I think is the direction we would have taken in our consortium, is to actually use one record, but provide our local notes explaining, and this is just an example, like the University of Memphis links only to the full video, or Jackson State Community College links to the chaptered version, to give people an understanding of why they might have gotten to a different place through the different links, particularly in our environment, because we do actually have students who are students both at the University of Memphis and at Jackson State, so the possibility exists that they could actually get to two different sites and wonder why. And this at least gives the explanation, the ability to provide the explanation in the bibliographic record, which is one of the things we wanted to do. Interestingly enough, when we started to put this presentation together, though, we went out and wanted to get you a screenshot of how they both looked, and both of the two addresses were now going to chaptered versions of the video. and they still have two separate addresses for them, but they both now show chaptered versions. And that just points out, one of the issues whenever you deal with any kind of, electronic resources is they are extremely volatile, and what you see today may not be what you see tomorrow when you look at them. And points out the value of having, with all e-resources, the 500 data viewing note that just lets you know this cataloging was based on something that was done a month ago as opposed to yesterday, which is why the catalog record and the actual thing it's cataloging may not look as close as it is if you pick up a book that isn't going to change. This is then just a screenshot of what the FMG website looks like when you get the screen up and the chaptered list. The top one, it shows us right here, this is the full video, and then you can look at Legacy of Ancient Greece for 1 minute and 13 seconds, Culture for, whoops, my mouse just disappeared, for 2 minutes, and the different things that students can do. They do have the option of viewing the full screen and not just watching it in a tiny little screen if they want, but this is where they ultimately get when they get through everything. Since we are a consortium, and as we said, not all of our consortium members are TBR institutions and can't have access to it, we decided to use a 506 note that says access restricted to TBR libraries. This note is not in the OCLC master record simply because it applies to access restrictions which involve only our institutions. But it explains to people why if they're clicking, since we all know everyone sees a blue link and you click and half the time you don't read the text, I don't half the time, to explain why they couldn't get where they thought they were going. One of the things that we will need to do with these types of notes and is up for future consideration is the more, of course, we personalize with 500 notes, the more we have to edit if, for example, Lemoyne-Owen were to decide to go in and purchase some FMG videos that were the same as the ones that we had purchased and wanted to provide access to it, then we would, of course, have to amend that note because they might be able to get in through a separate purchase agreement. But then we have to keep track of that kind of information, hopefully somewhere in the bibliographic record or in some other means. Then there were issues that we ran into in our local catalog. We decided to use a local e-video call number in the 099 field. This parallels the e-book treatment that we set up when we started doing our net library records. Interestingly enough, we are in the middle of a migration to a new ILS system, and this is causing some interesting issues as we test it out in the new system, so we may be needing to rethink this, because our new system allows you to browse by call number, and people see a link, and they're like, whoops, I can't get to the video, because they're getting to a call number browse. But it worked in our old system. We still retain, despite doing that, the subject classification in the 050 and the 090, that allows us to provide collection management information based on call number ranges, because this is, even though we don't own the material, we have access to it. And it does give a different set of browsing purposes. So I like that feature of it, but we didn't want to display the standard LC call number within our primary call number scheme, because if you displayed that, we were afraid people would come up, oh, PJ so-and-so, pick up and go up into the shelves looking for PJ, you know, looking for a specific video. So that's the issue. I mean, how do you balance providing information yet making sure that people aren't accidentally walking your stacks looking for something that they just need to click to get? We also, of course, have the 856, which are your linking fields. And we need it in our local catalog just to make sure that we're linking to the correct version, that we've got the correct MARC coding that fits with all of our display characteristics and the way we've chosen to handle our 856s, that we have the correct text for links and descriptions, and we're in the process of trying to make sure that all of our text is becoming more uniform in the catalog so that we display similar text on the links throughout our records, hopefully making it clearer to our patrons. And that we've got all the proxy information that's correct for each library and that it works. When we actually do the cataloging in the OCLC record, we only put the direct link in. We don't put all our local proxy information in that. So on the master record, especially when we're doing original cataloging, it has just the direct link, and then we add all our proxy information once we've exported it to our local catalog. Then we're shifting gears.
When we decided to do the putting of the streaming videos into the online catalog about a year ago, we decided this. They were already available, as had been mentioned, from our local library catalogs. But we wanted a situation where they'd be more used and where they would be more accessible by students, say, searching by subject records or in other means. To do this, of course, obviously, we put it in the catalog so that they would be more easily found and that students would have an easy, ready link into the videos themselves. We had a small group of videos at first. We have, in fact, only 29 at the FMG On Demand. Obviously, there's many more that FMG On Demand supplies, but we bought a package of 29 at first. Package issues will become something that I discuss a little bit later here, because we are at Jackson State, and I also know at UM, in the process of deciding on getting even more. When we first started the cataloging, when we made up our minds to catalog, there was the question of what sort of records would we put in. The thing is, we could do it by original records, or we could, for most of these videos that we have, the streaming videos, there were VHS, DVD, and for some of the very old ones, even film strip records available in OCLC. We went to online and other sources, AACR2, and especially OLAC recommendations and guidelines for cataloging streaming media, which, by the way, is in your bibliography, the sources that we used, and you would be able to find it. We have the links included so that you would be able to find them online, and did some research on how to do the cataloging. Decided from the research that we did that we would not want to use either the VHS or DVD record for right now for this small group of streaming video that we were cataloging. We decided that what we wanted to do would be to do original cataloging when there was not in OCLC already an FMG On Demand record. And for the most part, there were not FMG On Demand records in OCLC. We did know that on top of the VHS and DVD records that many titles had as much as up to 3 or 4 other streaming video records available, sometimes very abbreviated, but it was obvious it said in the fields that they were streaming videos, the 500 fields. Some of them were streaming videos that were designed that were cataloged by a consortium group. Say OhioLINK is a great cataloger of streaming video records. We decided that we were going to create original records when we did not actually find an FMG On Demand record for the title in OCLC. Obviously, even when we found an FMG On Demand record in OCLC, it would require a good deal of editing to make it usable in our catalog. In the future, because of the fact that, as I said already, we're thinking about getting larger packages and we may even get more FMG On Demand records, we might have to go to a serials cataloging approach and use an aggregator neutral record. Have a record in the catalog no matter who the producer or distributor was, no matter the format, and have it be cataloged in this way. It's very time consuming to even do the editing, actually, on OCLC records that already exist of streaming videos. Very time consuming to do cataloging of streaming videos, do original cataloging of the streaming videos. So it might very well be a matter that in the future, just out of sheer necessity, we will have to go to aggregator neutral records. This will be something we think about. But we're not stating what we might do in the future. What the presentation that we're giving today is showing you what we decided to do at the time when we bought these records and how it progressed over time about our thinking about cataloging them and how we might handle in the future, how we might handle other packages that we purchase. Now, a little word more, as I said, you all have on the orange and the green sheets, we have the bibliographies of materials we used. I will mention one or two right now that we especially used. OLAC website, and the website is given on your sheet and also at the bottom of this slide. We have the best practices for cataloging streaming media. These best practices, they are guidelines. They are not firm and strict policies. It's a fairly new way of cataloging streaming media. We used it quite a bit. Sometimes we used it to actually reject maybe some of the policies that they had there, and because we had certain reasons to do it in the way we wanted to do it, to catalog in the records in the way we wanted to catalog them. We decided on the single versus separate, for example. OLAC talks about that, records in the local catalog. We could use the one record when the duration of the content for streaming video and tangible version was the same, and then with the cataloger, again, editing appropriate fields. We chose not to do that, largely because of the fact that our streaming videos, we wanted to have so much information in the 500 and other fields that would be particular to our records that we wanted the streaming videos to stand out just as streaming video records. We also used AACR2, in particular chapters 7 and 9. 7 has to do with motion pictures and video recording, 9 with electronic resources. Both were necessary to use, very obviously, because when you're dealing with streaming media videos, you're dealing with both formats. You're dealing with an electronic resource, the streaming part, and then, of course, you're dealing with video, the video recordings. In 7 and 9, when we started doing the cataloging, the way we began to catalog is we needed, of course, a chief source of information. Chapter 7 for the motion picture says the title frames and the item itself. We usually took our title. In fact, we would always take our title and series information from those first frames in the video. Chapter 9, you're allowed to use the entire resource, just as in Chapter 7 it tells you that you can use the entire resource in the end. When we got to cataloging the mark fields, the cataloging issue started with mark field 06. 06 determines that when two formats are cataloged, one will predominate in the OCLC record, and the 06 is used to capture fixed fields for the other formats. Well, we have the M format, the M code, because this is a computer file, but then we had to have something that would demonstrate, that would capture the fixed field element, that this was also a visual media, that this was representational. That we had the C representation media code. And that was based also on the OLAC recommendations that for streaming media, you had both for M for computer files and C for representational media. There are other codes that could be used as needed, audience and government documents, but we actually did not use those, did not have a use for them, at least in this package that we were working with. This is a shot of our connection client. The 06 field, as it is represented, it's guided entry, of course, the M and the C fields. Then we went on to the cataloging of the 07. Now, according to the OLAC guidelines and other information that we read in various places, you need, for streaming videos, streaming media, you need two 07 fields. Again, one to represent the video aspects, the original video aspect of the material, and then another to represent that it is an electronic resource, that it's a computer resource. The 07 codes physical characteristics for the items and adds for various types of materials, in this case both the video and electronic resources. The codes that we used obviously are listed. You could, everybody that's in cataloging knows where to find them, the OCLC bibliographic formats and standards. Standards and formats, and then, of course, the Library of Congress website. When we cataloged, there was very little in both of the 07s that related to one another. Field D had to do with whether there was color or black and white or multicolors on the medium, and field F related to sound on the medium. The rest would be a matter of, as I said, going to the Library of Congress or OCLC. We're using, again, this ancient Greece streaming media video. We will be using that throughout the presentation. Fixed fields. Well, there's nothing unique to streaming aspect of video cores as format. That would be just as you would have in just about any other medium. You'd have the language, country, dates, anything of that sort that would be the same. And as I said in this presentation, when I'm discussing about the cataloging, I'm basically going through information that would pertain particularly to the streaming media aspect of the cataloging that was done. 300 field. 300 field is optional for provision in streaming video records. OLAC says that it's optional. OLAC says that it's a good idea perhaps to use it, but says that if you decide for some reason not to use it, that definitely put the information in a 500 field for physical description, for the describing color, describing sound, and describing also duration of the medium, and that it is a streaming video record. We decided to use the 300 fields. Whether we will do so in the future, not sure whether we will or not. We did this because of the fact that for the 300 fields, when you include a 300 field, OLAC examples state, and OLAC recommendations are, that you have a lot of file information concerning the videos themselves. We did not have this, could not find it on the FMG sites. So we decided, which was perfectly allowable, to use the 500 field, as you see here in this slide, again from Connection Client. Streaming video, it's organized every way in all the catalogs, in all the streaming media that we cataloged. And then we had the time, and then whether it was in sound and color, or whether it was in sound and black and white, or sound and both. The 500 fields are where we had a lot of information that we put in, a lot of information unique to the streaming video aspects, and a lot of information that we wanted to provide to users of the catalog as well as to have for our own note. Again, this 500 streaming video, the physical information was there. You have already been told some about the 506 access restricted to TVR libraries note. This is a local note. It was not put into OCLC. It may be adjusted in the future as more libraries come into the consortium or leave, or it may vary for other reasons. 538, modes of access would be the World Wide Web, and 538 system requirements, you'd have to have QuickTime or Windows Media Player. Those, of course, 538 fields are not unique just to streaming video records, but we included them in this slide because of the fact that there were aspects of the 538 field that are unique. We wanted to bring it out that were unique to our actual doing the cataloging. We always included a 500 field stating that the title was from the video itself, as per AACR2 recommendations, and the date viewed, the original date that all these streaming media videos were viewed. We have a 500 field in there as well. Viewers can access the entire file or view individual chapters. And at this point, as you have been told, no matter which consortium library you're working with, you have that option. When you link into a record, you can access chapters, any chapters you want to, as you will see, or you can just access the entire file and play the entire streaming video. 505. Now, that's not, again, unique to streaming videos, certainly, but it is unique in the way we put it in that we put in that we had the chapters and then put in the titles and times of each of the chapters so that that information would be available to the patrons from the records themselves. 5XX, local notes, are for JSCC Library, that happens to be 599 notes. Local notes put in, usually these local notes have to do with library purchase information and such as that. Again, not an OCLC content, but something that we would add in later, just as we did the 506 ones. This is an example, again, OCLC connection, with the red arrows showing you, of the 500 fields that we've put in. We had the 520 field as well for the summary. Some fields we did not put in, like the 530 field, that would state about other media. We did not do that, other media in which this particular title, a particular title, might be available, such as on DVD or video. We didn't do it because, well, the idea of cataloging it as streaming media, streaming video in the first place, was that we wanted to have it, the record just concentrate on the fact that it is a streaming video record. Also, we might not have the title in other media. We might not have the particular title on VHS or DVD. Going on, 6XX fields. Obviously, records have the 6XX fields as well as 7XX fields, access points and author and title and subjects and headings. We wanted all of the variable streaming videos to have a 655 genre heading as streaming video so that they would be searchable in that way too. This we will want to, no matter how we catalog in the future, we will want to continue. The 856 fields. Now, since we have several libraries in the consortium that do have access to these records, these fields are repeated by each library as necessary. These are bibliographic, at least for right now, for the DRA catalog that we use, for the DRA cataloging that we do. The 856 field is included in the bibliographic record. It provides the specific links that go into the catalog, in the public view catalog, so that each students from each or patrons from each particular library can link in according to which library they use, which library they have access. This is from our Netcat. This is from the DRA catalog, from our actual cataloging. As you see in the 856 field, the underlined red part would be for the University of Memphis. This is the link. And it's the same for all of these streaming media that we cataloged, except for the little six-digit or six-letter in capitalized letters that give you access to that particular streaming video title. Here it's for ancient Greece, it's K-A-N-Y-U-Y. Below that, you see the link that we have for JSCC. Varies a little bit just in the way we set up the eProxy link. At present, we do not have any 856 links from the item records. That's just not the way our cataloging system is set up. Current cataloging doesn't allow hyperlinking from the item. We're in the process of migrating to a new system, to a new ILS system, to Innovative Millennium. Whether we'll be doing this in the future or not, whether we'll be actually using the 856 from the items, that remains to be seen. We did create item records for all of these videos. We used barcodes that were we were just borrowing some barcodes. I think Memphis for their item records was using some vapor records, dummy barcodes. We display the material for the material records for the e-resources as online. Call number, as mentioned, is the e-video. We have net library books and other electronic books. Those were e-book. And the location that we put into the items would be electronic resource, either JSEC or UM, wouldn't certainly be XXX electronic resource. This is an example of how this comes together in the online catalog, what patrons and students actually see, what our patrons actually see in the catalog. This, again, is our oral record for the ancient Greece for the streaming video. The call number is e-video. The locations, two libraries on this, UM and JSCC. Location is noted, and it's noted that it is an electronic resource in those two libraries. And the materials is designated as being an online resource, as being electronic, as being computer resource. The electronic access, readily available to the people by clicking here to view online via UM or clicking there to view online via JSCC, depending upon which library you are affiliated with. Now, in the future, we may have to discover a few ways to better deal with package information, particularly as we get more packages, as we get more records from FMG and other places. We need ways to locate all bib records in a package and to be able to update these records as titles are added or as partner libraries leave the system or add on titles themselves. The new system itself may solve some of this. As I say, we're in the process of migrating to a new library system. It might or might not be a solution. Aggregator neutral records that I mentioned a few minutes ago concerning what serials catalogers currently do. Possibly, as I said, it's time intensive, it's very labor intensive and time intensive to catalog records individually for streaming video. Even to edit them does take some time, which they would require some editing, but perhaps if they were cataloged as packages, some of this could be done in mass, some of it could be done in overall cataloging. The 856 fields in the bib records, the item records, again, depends upon what happens when we move to a new system. Depends on which way we can actually link, which ways we actually can create the links. Amending of 506 fields, we've already discussed. And we will be continuing, possibly with the 500 field for description, possibly not. If we go to the aggregator neutral records, then that would solve that problem there. We'd probably be going to a 300 field format. Contact information you have as well as a link to the presentation itself on the bibliographic sheet that I gave you, the bibliography. We've been very happy to have you here today speaking with us. We're willing to take any questions. Willing and ready. Okay.
We just don't know whether we're going to do it that way yet.
We just don't have to, do you?
Okay.
Part of that has to do with the way in which DRA works. The DRA system is designed to function primarily off item records, and that decision had been made when we started doing ebooks as part of the loading process,
so we
were trying to be consistent across the board. We may choose not to do that in the new system. That's, as I say, in migration, you know, all the marbles go up in the air. But that was the reason why. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I don't know.
Aggregating neutral records come out of the serials world. And as you know, serials, at least in electronic resources, have been at the cutting edge curve. And what happened is they started getting an OCLC. They would get EBSCO records for one journal. They would get Hightower records. They would get any one of a number of aggregators. They were getting records for each individual aggregator. And they made the decision in the serials world to create an aggregator neutral record. So if you were cataloging JAMA, say, for example, it wouldn't matter whether it was you were getting it through EBSCO, Highwire, Project Muse, or JSTOR, you'd have a single record that you would adapt depending on where your aggregator was, as opposed to having, you know, 20 different records for a particular time. And it seemed to me, coming from, I'm basically a serials cataloger at heart, that I think that we may, I'm not as sure, I don't know that we'll get as many aggregators in the streaming video field because it's fairly new, but we the potential exists to have streaming video records for FMG and a number of other different producers. So I see the potential for going to an aggregator neutral record for this type of electronic media as well.
As I mentioned, some of these titles, even just as new as the cataloging is in OCLC for streaming media, already some of these titles had like three or four different people that had produced records on them from various producers, various schools sometimes that had actually done the producing, such as Ohioland. If that continues, you would obviously have too many records, then you would have to go to an aggregator neutral. Thank you.
Thank you very much.